Welcome to Behind the Panels, Issue 18, the comic book podcast that was orphaned by crime and now chooses to fight it by making belittling comments behind its back. I'm one of your co-hosts, Richard Gray.
And I'm your other co-host, David McVeigh. I'm not quite sure of that introduction. I was sitting there trying to think of something witty to come back with, but I couldn't quite get there. How are you, Richard?
I'm well. I'll make belittling comments about you later.
Fair enough. I'm just not thinking that fast. Did I tell you I'm tired tonight?
Yes. As you've probably figured out, if you've stuck with us for 18 issues, we don't record these at good hours.
No. We kind of record them when we can.
Yeah.
So, speaking of recording, what's on the show, Richard?
Well, this week, The Guardian names the greatest comic hero ever. Ever, David.
Ever. Ever. It's got to be Aquaman, right?
I can only assume so. The most important new character in Archie history sells out. Marvel goes even more.
So who's this Marvin you speak of?
I come in peace.
Isn't that nice?
I created this product.
Marvel goes even more digital than digital, and then they let you have your cake and eat it too.
Wow.
But only under certain legally binding circumstances. Then the governor comes to life in The Walking Dead. The Avengers launch a second trailer. Plus, our kick-ass sort of pick of the week, Warlord of Mars, Fall of Barsoom or something.
Did I tell you that a great sleeping pill is this comic book?
Get to that later. First, as always, our vintage clip of the week.
I am John Jones, leader of the Justice League. As you can see, we met before.
At the office, when you were acting so strange.
I apologize for leaving so abruptly. I have only a limited time in human form. Your first alien, I presume?
I met Leonard Nimoy once. Why am I here?
I sought refuge on your planet because my own world had none of the freedoms that you take for granted. I vowed to protect those rights, so I scoured the Earth in search of those whose gifts could help me fulfill that dream. You are such a person, Tori.
What are you saying?
We want you to join the Justice League.
But I'm not a superhero.
That young man you saved from drowning would disagree.
I didn't know what I was doing.
You can learn, Tori. I'll teach you, just as I've taught all of them. Do you think they knew what to do when they started? They came upon their gifts just like you did.
Actually, I'm the only other lab accident. Radioactive deposit in the desert, about the same time the Green Lantern found his ring.
I was born a fire starter.
You should have seen how many they had to put out.
Look, I'm very flattered, but I just want my old life back.
It's no longer there, Tori. You are completely different now from everyone else.
Except for us.
What seems like a curse can become a gift. Either way, it's part of you now. You must decide whether you want to keep on running from it. Face it.
First of all, I'm a Martian. I don't sweat. I perspire. And secondly, I don't perspire.
I met Leonard Nimoy once.
Oh, man, that film.
One of us.
Could they make the Justice League sound any more lame?
Yeah. Come with us, Tori. Drink the Kool-Aid.
Oh, man, I remember watching that many years ago. I don't think I've seen it in about 10 years.
It all came flooding back when I was watching it. That was, of course, the 1997 TV pilot for the Justice League of America, which for some reason they did as a series of flashbacks, people talking to camera about, I remember when I first met him.
It's the when Harry met Sally complex that was going on around
that
time.
It was really weird. When Harry met John Jones.
And let's talk about John Jones for a second.
Yeah, well, I included the clip this week because of John Jones, which we're doing a John Carter-related Barsoom Mars novel thing. I thought it would be appropriate to do Martian Manhunter as our vintage clip of the week. So I looked for the worst example of Martian Manhunter in
now,
history.
As a shapeshifter, you would think he would give himself a better physique.
Well, yeah, look, his head looks fine. This is David Ogden Stiers, who's playing the awesome David Ogden Stiers, I should say. He's normally very, very good, but his head looks fine. He looks like the Martian Manhunter, and then he's just got this beer gut. below that. It's like, as you've said, if he's a shapeshifter, surely he could shift his shape into something better.
And I love the fact she goes, around the same time the Green Lantern found his ring, what, like in a box of Wheaties?
Well, apparently he did. He just found it. That's his origin story. He found the ring somewhere.
Yeah, methinks that DC didn't give them all the rights.
No. They said, well, Green Lantern's turquoise.
That's true. That's true. And yeah, no, it's terrible. If you can avoid it, avoid it. But, you know, it is good for a laugh.
It's around the kind of, you know, same quality / era as the Flash TV series.
Flash, there was a big era. It was the Flash TV series. It was, they did the Nick Fury pilot that came out around that time with David Hasselhoff as Nick Fury. there was another one as well. There was a whole bunch of these pilots that came out. The only one that actually went to series, I think, was The Flash. And then that only lasted a season.
That's right.
Which, guilty pleasure, I actually quite like The Flash.
I remember really enjoying it at the time that it came out. So, I can't say a bad word about it, because I actually remember watching it.
Yeah, it was written by the guys who actually wrote RoboCop.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, Bilson, was that his name? Anyway, but I just remember that was like their big thing, was the fact that they went off and wrote The Flash after that. And I thought they actually handled that pretty well.
Yeah, well, look, I think it'd be good to see a few more live-action TV series, because God knows DC aren't doing movies very well at the moment.
Now, speaking of live-action TV series, I know we're not in the film section here, but I was actually, you know how I've been reading. Well, let's actually go into what we've been reading, and we'll talk about that.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I've been plowing my way, God help me, through Warlord of Mars, Fall of Barsoom, or whatever it's called, so big this week.
Fall of the Bassoon, yeah.
Yeah, follow the bassoon. So I read that this week, and that was interesting. But I really, really, really
that's
tried to catch up on.
That's a word.
That's a word.
I don't think it's a word I would apply to the comic, but it's a word.
Actually, here's another word. Fascinating. Also a word I wouldn't apply to the comic. Yeah, no, look, it's... we'll talk about that in more detail in the second half of the show, but I basically tried to catch up on everything ever. I tried to read all the DC comics that I hadn't caught up with yet, because I realized I'd been trying to get through these in chunks and I'd missed a bunch of stuff. So I actually got around to reading all the super books, and I think it is starting to create a definite story there 5 years apart, the particular way that Action Comics is sort of straddling 2 5-year periods. I read Swamp Thing, which I'm really enjoying. I didn't think I was going to, but having been a big fan of Animal Man, I'm Animal Fan. I just really like animals, and that's my superpower.
I got to give Swamp Thing a little bit more time, because I read the first, I think, 3 or 4 issues. And I kind of lost me, and I haven't gone back to it. So I think
I'm 6 issues in, and it's got kind of a cool story. It's kind of dark and twisted, a little bit like Animal Man.
Yeah. See, I kept saying, when's he going to become Swamp Thing?
It's like, okay. Yeah. Well, it is that kind of thing. It's almost like Marvel's Ghost Rider at the moment.
A little bit, yeah, a little bit. Where you sit there, you're treading water, going, "When's it going to start?"
Yeah. So you've kind of got that sort of feeling to it as well. But yeah, no, I'm into that. Teen Titans, I'm kind of liking that at the moment.
I'm digging Teen Titans.
Touched that before. But yeah, look, you know, and as I said, I think I said last week, Resurrection Man. I'm kind of liking where that's heading.
Yeah, I need to go and catch up with Resurrection Man. I read the first couple and I just haven't got back to it. I kind of dug what I read. It was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And apparently he is actually going to be featuring more and more in Justice League Dark.
Right.
I believe he's already made one crossover to Justice League Dark, which I don't remember seeing, but apparently they've talked about it, so it might be coming up. But yeah, so I think...
I've read all the Justice League Dark, so... Yeah,
so he wasn't there yet, but they have talked about it, so I think we're going to see more about that.
Okay. Which it's another book I don't mind too much. It's one of those ones that I think is going to get overlooked.
Well, and once again, and I think issue 6, they're finally starting to look like they're turning into a team.
Yeah, and the whole first couple of issues, they were resisting that notion of being a team. But I think, look, the characters they've got in there are actually quite cool. And I think one of the good things about Justice League Dark is that it's made all these kind of peripheral characters cool again.
Yeah, kind of. My only complaint would be that in the reboot, once again, this is just individual characters. In the reboot, Zatanna has been toned down.
Yes.
Because she was actually very powerful in her own book before the reboot. And I'm not entirely sure I like what they've done with her. So
yeah, well, look, and that's true of a lot of heroes. And I mean, I think I'm thinking of writing up a little piece on my site at some stage, and maybe it's worth exploring in later shows. But just the whole idea of what happened to our heroes. You know, I mean, are we ever going to get those heroes back again?
Well, I don't think DC wants to, but I think it's funny. It's one of those things where I sit there and go, "Do you know what's going to happen? This reboot is going to lead to other titles coming back. I can just feel it happening."
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, as I've said constantly throughout this whole thing, I love the idea of the New 52, and we really need to move on in a minute, but I really love the idea of the New 52, but what I don't like is the idea that it has literally gone out with the old, and part of that was a knee-jerk reaction to the Superman legal crisis. Where they did actually literally have to reinvent the character.
But funnily enough, still not settled.
Still not settled.
So that could still blow up in their face, and they could still have to reboot him again.
Indeed, but I don't know. I mean, you know, look, obvious characters that they have completely changed, and there doesn't seem to be any acknowledgement of the history. And you know, they were characters, and you've said this as well, particularly Wonder Woman, Green Arrow, Green Lantern seems to have kept its storyline, which is good because they'd actually built something up really interesting and involved and complex over
but,
the last 5 years.
But in the defense of your favorite characters, so had Green Arrow.
Absolutely. And I didn't want to use him as an example because I'm always forever using him as an example, but I think that is a really good example for me because I've got several hundred issues with that character in it now, but he doesn't exist anymore as far as we can tell. And look, you know, maybe this is something they're building up to.
Some of the rebooted characters have worked really, really well. I think the rebooted Supergirl is fabulous. I think the rebooted
I was just reading that before we got onto the show, and it's a really good
book. I think the rebooted Aquaman, as we've talked about before, is a much improved Aquaman. You know what I mean? I really do like the new Teen Titans. I've been really digging that since it started. So there's a bunch of them where you go, the reboots have worked really well for some of these characters. I'm at a point where I'm starting to think I don't think DC needed to reboot everything.
No, and I think, as we've said many times, Marvel's played this much better with the whole idea of rebooting, but not rebooting the whole world because it's, as they call it, a stealth reboot.
Yeah.
Not rebooting the world, so the characters are still where they were when we left them, you know, at last issue, but they are... They give you conclusive jumping on points.
They've just made
them in a new way so that it's fresh.
That's exactly right. The words you just used there are perfect. They made jumping on points.
Yeah.
So they made it so that it was accessible to people who hadn't read comics. And that's all that DC really had to do. They had to make a point where people could get on.
Because the point I always love to make is that every comic, no matter what comic it is, every comic is somebody's first comic.
That's exactly right. And then they go and they do things like, have you read DC Presents issue 6 yet?
No, DC Presents, I haven't read that one yet. That's the Dead Man book.
No, it's not anymore.
Oh.
So I pick up issue 6 and I think, okay, because I really liked the last two issues of Dead Man. And I thought this is going to be really good. It's a new story.
I'll challenge the unknown now.
Yeah.
Okay.
They've just kind of gone, okay, Dead Man's done. Let's move on.
Oh, that's a real shame because that was a book I was really enjoying.
Me too. I was really liking it. So now the only Dead Man we're going to get is in Justice League Dark.
Dark, yeah.
So I was really kind of upset by that. I was really kind of upset that you just went, oh, that's enough. Because
it was a bit excessive that, you know, Dead Man had two books, but I think based on what we saw in first one issues. Exactly. Like, I mean, look, the thing is, DC's chasing the Bat Dragon.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the problem. Okay, it's a bit excessive that Dead Man has two books, but Batman can have 50. It's like, what the hell?
And it's like, you know, we're not kidding. I mean, he has literally a dozen books.
He has a third, at least, of the new 52.
No, quite literally a third of the new 52.
It's ridiculous. Anyway, so, look, I read the second issue of Winter Soldier came out.
Oh, of course, yes.
I'm digging that book. That's a really, really good book.
Yeah, no, I went through the first issue and, you know, I quite enjoyed that. So, yeah, no, definitely one to check out.
So yeah, I read the second issue of that, and I read, I was also doing the New 52 thing. There's always new 52s that have to be read. And funnily enough, I've also been going back. I was actually kind of getting into, and this is going to sound really weird because it's such a retro book, but they've actually done a good job rebooting it. Vampirella from Dynamite Comics.
It's funny because I kept seeing the ads for Vampirella when we're going through this week's pick.
And, unfortunately, the last couple issues aren't very good, but Vampirella issues 1 through, I think it's 10 or 11, which is actually a full story arc, and they conclude the story on that arc.
This is a new run of issues?
New run of issues of Vampirella. Right. It's a complete reboot. Dynamite took it over and has done this beautiful reboot of it. Great artwork. She's not wearing the cheesy costume anymore. She is, but only in visions and in flashbacks.
Right.
And stuff like that, whereas her normal clothes, she's kind of wearing just jeans and a jacket and stuff like that. And she's a vampire hunter. And it's right. Actually, she's a vampire who's a vampire hunter.
And that's so hot right now.
It's very hot right now, and it's a really hot book. Well, it was. Unfortunately, once they finished that first story arc, it's kind of become ho-hum.
Which
is kind of a shame. But, there's a lot of great comics out there, and of course, I also read the Pick of the Week, which was... I'll never get that part of my life back again.
No. And look, we can only apologize to ourselves and to the people who will be listening to us rant about it at the end of the show. But, David, we have to move on with our lives, with this show.
Here we go.
What a scoop!
All right, Richard, hit me with it. What's the first in news?
God, that theme makes me feel good.
It does, doesn't it? Wake up.
The first news story comes from the UK's newspaper, The Guardian, where Batman has been named the greatest comic book hero.
Of all time.
Of all time.
Wow. Well, that's why he's got a third of the books, I guess.
Apparently, the readers of Comic Heroes magazine voted for Batman. Well, the story comes from The Guardian, actually. The actual poll was from Comic Heroes magazine,
mm-hmm.
Who voted for Batman. The alias of billionaire Bruce Wayne, of course, as their top comic hero, ahead of the second-placed Spider-Man and the third-placed Superman. No great shocks there in the top three.
I'm actually surprised that Spider-Man outranks Superman.
I'm not surprised Spider-Man outranks Superman. Spider-Man's pretty hot right now.
No, he is, but in comic book words, I mean, the Holy Trinity has always been Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. You know what I mean? And so you look at it and go, wow, it's for Spider-Man to just jump in between Batman and Superman, that's quite something.
What's interesting, they compared it to a 2008 Empire magazine poll, which put Superman, and this is so 4 years ago, the Empire magazine readers put Superman at the top, followed by Batman, and then Constantine.
Constantine?
Yeah, and but Superman also topped a poll from IGN. But to give you the full list, I'll give it to you from number 10 upwards. Number 10 is The Thing.
Oh, good, yeah. It's clobbering
number
pain.
Number nine is The Spirit.
Really?
Yeah, really. I did a double take on that one.
Are grandparents still reading comic books?
Apparently. There's those three people who went and saw the Frank Miller movie and didn't hate it. And didn't want to tear their eyeballs out in frustration.
Mm.
Number eight, Wonder Woman.
Okay.
Wow, number seven, low down the list, Captain America.
Yeah. Hold on. Did you say Captain America?
I did.
When Captain America throws his mighty shield.
Sorry, I couldn't resist.
Oh, I just go around singing that all week now. Stuck in my head. Number six is Tintin.
Okay.
Number five surprised me, Judge Dredd.
Now, is this a British? Yeah, this is Empire, isn't it? What magazine is this?
This is Comic Heroes magazine.
Yeah, it's British.
Yeah.
Yeah, Comic Heroes is a British magazine from the same people. Who is it? It's, I forget the name of the publisher, but yeah, they do a lot
SFX.
Of... Sorry?
SFX.
SFX. All right. Not surprising that Judge Dredd is on that list.
They also do Total Film, by the way.
Yes, that's the one I was
Same publishers. Yeah. Number four is Wolverine, and as we've said, number 3, 2, and 1 are Superman, Spider-Man, and Batman, respectively. David, who is your favorite comic book hero of all time?
My favorite comic book hero of all time? I'm going to have to throw in and say Spider-Man.
Great flaming arrow.
I know who yours is. no, I'm going to have to throw in and say
Calling Green Arrow. Come in, Green Arrow.
Not on the list anywhere.
Not a chance. but I would have to say that my favorite is...
Spider-Man, Spider-Man, does whatever a spider can.
Yes, he does. With proportional strength and speed.
Hey, I'm amazing.
Yeah, look, now Spider-Man, I think is a valid decision, David. No, I actually say I think
it's
Spider-Man.
It's a valid life choice, you reckon?
It's a valid life choice, David. I think Spider-Man would be a close second for me because he's kind of got sort of things that you want in a hero that makes Batman and Green Arrow and all those sorts of characters appealing, and they're just dudes who have got utility belts, really, and yeah, skills. But Spider-Man's kind of just an average guy who has superpowers rather than being a Superman, Wonder Woman-style person who is godlike.
Well, exactly, and that's the thing. Spider-Man was always... The Peter Parker character was always as interesting as the Spider-Man character, and the events that were happening in Parker's life were always as interesting as when he put on the costume.
Exactly.
And that's what made him kind of compelling, especially when I started reading Spider-Man, I was early teens, and you can imagine, it really spoke to me.
Yeah, look, and Spider-Man has long been a favorite comic of mine. I wouldn't say it's not one that I've actively read until recently. Like I did used to read Amazing Spider-Man a lot of the time, and now, of course, I'm reading it along with The Avenging Spider-Man. But he's a character that always is interesting, no matter when you pick him up. And I think it's for those very reasons, because the things that haven't changed about Spider-Man over years are fundamentally, as you say, Peter Parker is just as interesting in and out of the costume, whereas sometimes Clark Kent and Bruce Wayne are badly written and it's only the actual super stories that are interesting in that particular issue.
Absolutely. So, I have to say, though, looking at this list as well, I have a real soft spot, funnily enough, for Judge Dredd as well. I love the 2000 AD comic, and I love the Judge Dredd character. They haven't done him well on film, unfortunately.
The new one coming out looks like it might make up for that.
Might get somewhere closer to it. I was actually kind of thrilled with the first stills I saw, and the most recent ones I've been a little bit colder on.
Yeah, so, they've been giving the way. I mean, these things are really hard. When you've got a character that's so iconic.
And it's so over the top as well. I mean, that's the thing.
Exactly.
To do Judge Dredd faithful to the comic book is so unbelievably over the top, it'll never work. You have to do something to make it. I mean, the fact is that even in the Stallone one with the giant lapels and the giant bits of armor and, you know, and all this, you sit there and look and go, it's just so stupid when you really think about it. You know,
it's really hard to get over the top and people have this idea of what comic books are when they're making those sort of movies. So it's a very strange thing there. But moving swiftly along. In the comic book
swiftly
news,
as we seem to be able to do tonight.
This week, 20-odd minutes into the show and a two-second story in. I've got another story, David, that...
Archie and Veronica blush.
Again?
Again. Now, this second story is Archie Comics have once again released another controversial issue. And as this article from Comic Book Resources says, and somewhere 1 million mums scream, no. apparently, Archie Comics announced today via press release that, and this is today, was on, March 1st it was. So they announced via press release that Life with Archie number 16, which features the marriage of Riverdale's first gay character, has sold out.
Oh, dear. All right, so no, I have no problem with having a married couple. That's not the issue here. I'm just wondering, is Archie ever going to release an issue that isn't controversial now?
Well, this is the thing. I mean, obviously, Archie Comics would be struggling to keep up with modern audiences. They've got a very distinct reputation to them.
The window.
Yeah, exactly. and, you know, that little speech in Chasing Amy notwithstanding, about Archie being quite close to Mr. Weatherby. He's just offering to help him with his homework. It does seem as though every time we mention an Archie story now, they're doing, you know, Occupy Riverdale or the first gay marriage. And I think it's great that they're dealing with social issues, and comics are a great platform for that. But it seems as though this is sold on hype alone, and that they knew that they would be getting a reaction from family groups like the Million Moms.
Yeah.
The group was targeting the Toys R Us stores for selling the comic and trying to get them removed from shelves, but apparently the plan backfired. Well, they did get them removed from shelves because they all sold.
That's one way to remove it.
Yeah. Well, it worked.
It worked. All right. So my question is, why didn't they just really just step outside the boundary? Why didn't we have Archie and Jughead get married? Now, that would be the issue to buy.
But it'd go against the spirit of the characters. It you know, I'm all for controversial issues, but not like, Captain America suddenly comes out. There's been no indication of that whatsoever in...
I think Jughead has been an admirer of Archie from afar for a long time.
Now, if Jughead came out, that's right. But I mean, Archie's clearly into Betty and Veronica.
And now the other... All right, so that brings us... That really brings up the other question is, when is Archie going to find himself in a Betty and Veronica sandwich?
I hope that's an issue I will buy.
There's an issue I would buy. With Reggie filming.
You know, even if he's feeling adventurous, a Jughead and Betty sandwich or a Jughead and...
There you go. And Reggie can film it.
There you go. See, look, why aren't we writing for Archie Comics?
I don't know. We should just go apply for jobs, I think.
If they want controversy, put us in charge of story planning. We'll do it for nothing, just to get the headlines.
Absolutely. You hear that, Archie Comics? We're for hire, and we work cheap.
Right, next story is, with that magnificent segue, Marvel Digital Graphic Novels, now available on Apple's iBook Store. Now, this is this was announced by Marvel earlier this week. It's on the official Marvel website. Links in the show notes. This in and of itself is not new news in the sense that Marvel Comics have been available on their own Marvel app digitally for a while, but they're releasing graphic novels in the iBook store, the same way that you can purchase other books in there as well. What I find interesting about this story is that they've released here a list of a few dozen graphic novels, like full collections here that you can download as one hit. I find it interesting because this is almost the digital equivalent of making a huge section of graphic novels available in Borders.
Yeah, and look, I actually have to say that I don't kind of dig this because I've actually loaded up a couple of comic books in PDF forms into iBooks to have a look at what it would look like in an iBooks. And it doesn't lend itself to comic book reading because you can't enlarge text and stuff like that in the balloons if something is written too small or something like that. So something like Comixology, where you can actually zoom in on things, actually makes much more sense. The iBook store just doesn't lend itself to this format, I don't think. I mean, I'll have to see one and actually see what a purchased one looks like.
I'll probably agree with you on that level, but I think the point I was trying to make was that by releasing it into the iBook store, it's going to attract maybe more readers than the people who would actually go to the effort of going to the Marvel Comixology app, downloading that, getting the distinct Marvel stuff each week. It's, you know, if you want to make the distinction, the Comixology app is kind of like your specialist comic book store, and iBook store is obviously like your big Borders, Amazon kind of chain.
That's true.
It makes it more accessible. They may not be in the format that you prefer to read, i.e., graphic novels versus single issues, and single issues, you know, have their advantages over graphic novels and so forth. So I like that comparison. This is kind of the digital thing. Look, you know what? Every other digital publishing industries, and, you know, as I've said before, I work in a library, and journals and ebooks have been struggling with this for the last, 10, 15 years. We're still at a place where publishers are coming to grips with what they're going to do with it, and they're where maybe MP3 downloads were 10 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just looking through this list of titles as well. There's some good stuff in here.
There's some really good stuff in there, and I think that's what they're trying to go for. They're trying to get that. I mean, the fact that you can get, and I don't know what the price point is on this stuff. I don't think it actually says it in there, so we'll actually have to have a look in the iBook store and get back to you on that. But they've got the complete run of Ultimate Spider-Man, for example.
Are these available now?
Yes, today. It was released. Sorry, this was... released yesterday.
Oh, actually, and a better question, is this available only in the States at this point, or is this available?
That's a good question.
Yeah, that's actually an even better question.
I'll look that up while we go on to the next story.
All right, not a problem. I'm just having a look at it. They've got Civil War, but I bet you it's just the 5-issue or 6-issue miniseries in the middle.
Yeah, no, that'd be a fair bit of effort to get all that onto iBook store. The next story we've actually got is still on Marvel. Marvel cakes. Now, there's a there was
okay,
no segue,
sweetie pies.
But this is Marvel cake. I'm hungry. Now, apparently, there's a lot of big parties going on around the release of Avengers versus X-Men.
Right.
And apparently 1,100 registered parties. They do this at different comic book stores. You can register to have a party for the launch of this new book. Now, it's a good promotional thing. Now, apparently, if you want to have a cake at that event and you want to have an X-Men themed cake,
mm-hmm.
Marvel is allowing comic stores to create an Avengers versus X-Men cake for the event. But, of course, there's legal issues there. Independent cake stores creating Marvel cakes without a license, that would never do, as the article says on Bleeding Cool, which is why Marvel is making a waiver available.
Pardon, it's a cake.
Now, I'll just read you. As you know, David, I once was a lawyer of sorts.
I wouldn't say that in
I'm
public.
Proud of.
Yeah.
I was a law clerk, to be specific, but I do have a law degree, so I'll read this in my best legal mind on. Marvel character, to whom it may concern. Re Marvel Comics cakes for AVX number one launch party. Marvel Characters Inc., known as Marvel henceforth, hereby grants the comic shop / retail store mentioned above and your bakery shop the one-time only permission to use and reproduce the artwork design shown on the attached exhibit featuring Marvel comic book characters for the top of a cake to be purchased and used by the comic book... On the top of the cake, David.
On the top, not the side.
No, not the side. Yeah. And used by the comic book shop on or about April 3rd, 2012.
On or about.
On or about. Marvel confirms that it is the owner of all copyright in the image. The rights granted herein are solely limited to the use described in the foregoing paragraph. Any other use of Marvel's comic book material must be submitted to Marvel for prior approval. Sincerely yours, Carol Pincus.
And now, how many bakeries do you think are just going to make these damn cakes without doing any of this anyway? How many bakeries are out there right now doing Spider-Man birthday cakes and stuff without having approval?
Oh, look, you know, I dread to think, David, how many rogue cakes there are out there.
So I'm assuming that the sponsored image or the what is it, the reproduced the artwork design shown on the attached exhibit would be this A versus X picture. Is that the one we're talking about?
I'm guessing, yeah.
And this is only for this launch event.
Yes.
God forbid.
So if you wanted to make another cake for a later event, you'd have to reapply for permission.
I see. And how does one go about getting the waiver? Do you just download it off this website, or do you have to actually go apply at Marvel? There's so many questions.
Look, it's a dizzying world we've entered into here.
I'm just going to say for the record that I don't want a Marvel cake at this point.
Oh, you're no fun, David.
And if I did, I'd get you to be on my lawyer for the negotiation. Okay.
The man just wanted some cake. Also, as far as I can tell, I can't find any of the Marvel stuff in the Australian iBook store at the moment.
Right. So it doesn't surprise me. The US bookstore is a lot. What's the word I'm looking for? A lot better stocked. That's not the right words, but anyway, you know, there's a lot.
It'll do, David. We know what you mean.
There's a lot more product in the American store at this point.
Better cakes, too.
Better cakes. Damn straight. All right, I think we need to move on, don't you?
We're way over time, so let's just do it.
Let's do this. And very quickly, before you start your first story, what I was trying to say at the beginning of the show, in the latest issue of Powers, now remember we talked a few weeks ago that the Powers TV series had been put on hold or
yes.
was not happening? Well, in the latest issue of Powers, which actually came out last month, the very back section of it is all Brian Michael Bendis talking about the shooting of the Powers pilot with photographs from the shoot.
Right.
And photos of the cast and scenes from the thing and saying how excited he was and this is all moving ahead.
Okay, well, I'm just color me confused.
Yeah, me too. So we need more information on this because I don't think anybody's told Brian Michael Bendis that they've canceled it.
Maybe we should. Well, let's see if we can hit up Brian Michael Bendis and get him to come and talk to us.
Absolutely. Let's see if he's out on Twitter or something. We'll see if we can.
He's definitely on Twitter.
All right, well, let's get him on Twitter and we'll say, is the Power series happening? We want to know.
inquiring minds want to know.
Inquiring minds want to know. And do we need a waiver to watch it? All right, now.
Only for having a launch party with a cake.
Right. Okay. I'm glad we cleared that up. Now, David Morrissey.
David Morrissey, British actor.
Yes.
You may recognize him. He was in Doctor Who episode. He was in The Other Boleyn Girl, Centurion, yes. The Water Horse, Nowhere Boy, films like that. He was in a great TV show called Blackpool. He was in the original State of Play.
Yep.
Has been cast to play the Governor.
Oh, yeah.
In the Walking Dead TV series.
This is such good news. It means we're finally moving away from the farmhouse.
Well, the Governor made his debut in issue 27 of the comic.
Well, that's okay. The TV series still hasn't got past about issue 6.
Yeah, and we're 700 episodes into that?
That's about right.
So, might I just add that the Walking Dead officially started on Australian television this last week.
About time. All right. So the Governor coming into it means that, and sorry, this is minor spoilers, but it means we're finally going to be heading to the prison because this is all part of that same story arc. This is the story arc of The Walking Dead. If you read no other Walking Dead issues, this story arc is the one to read. This is dark, it is dangerous, it is evil, and it is brilliant.
Well, it's going to be the basis for season 3, which AMC have just ordered a 16 episode series 3.
Cool.
And it's going to begin production in spring in Atlanta, so that'll be the US spring.
I am suddenly excited about this TV series again.
Yeah, well, look, you know, I'm starting to get back into Walking Dead as well, so I'll catch up to the Governor.
Now, I do have to say, though, before we can get to the Governor, we have to introduce a character who is vital to this entire story arc, which is this Michonne character, which is, we said on the show way back, the character who carries the samurai sword. And we teased that with you with the day we did Walking Dead.
That's right.
So, but we still haven't introduced her to the TV series. So we have to bring her in as well.
Maybe she'll debut at the start of season 3 as well.
Maybe.
Because they don't say where in season 3 he'll appear, but he has just been cast. So.
You just have the Governor come in and say, "Hi, I'm the Governor. Bye-bye." Bob. All right. And then we'll all just go, "Oh." All right. Yes?
I don't know if you're aware that there's a few comic book movies coming out this year.
Really? Oh, I'm looking forward. What are they?
one of them's based on the Avengers, the little comic book.
I think I've heard of that.
Marvel. They made a few prequels to this already.
Mm-hmm.
Do tell. Iron Man, Incredible Hulk, Thor, Captain America.
Wow, little indie films.
None of them really sort of... made a blip on anybody's radar. And the first Avengers trailer kind of appeared, you know, a few weeks ago, a month ago. No one really noticed. So they released a second one.
Just to see if they could capture people's attention.
Just to see if they could capture, because that dropped, no one noticed it. The Avengers trailer dropped. Everyone thought, terrible. Let's never go and see this thing. Don't want to see any more footage. That's enough. Thank you very much. So they introduced this, and, you know, I thought it was okay.
All right, well, let's have a listen.
War has started, and we are hopelessly outgunned.
Director Fury, I think it's time.
You here with a mission, sir? Trying to get me back in the world?
Trying to save it.
Doctor, I need you to come in.
What if I say no?
I'll persuade you.
What are you asking me to do?
It's called the Avengers Initiative.
I thought I didn't qualify. Apparently I'm, what is it? Volatile, self-obsessed, and don't play well with others.
I think they need a timeout.
Desperate are you? And you call on such lost creatures to defend you.
You have made me very desperate.
We're not a team. We're a time bomb.
This is nothing we were ever trained for.
Oh, you have made me very desperate.
I think I need to go clean up a little bit.
Yeah, in case you couldn't tell before, that was a tiny little bit of sarcasm on my part before the trailer. Yeah, I'm kind of buzzed by this.
This was an awesome trailer. This was every trailer for the Avengers has progressively gotten better, and this finally captured the epic scope of what this story has to be to make it
and
work.
And you said, I think you said the right word, their story, because like the other ones, the first trailer showed us a little bit of tease. The second trailer, the Super Bowl trailer showed us all the action that was going to be in that, and that looks awesome. This one actually shows that there's a big, epic, awesome story behind it all.
Absolutely. And I just, all I can think is, for an uber geek like Joss Whedon, how fun must this sandbox have been to play in?
There's just shots in there. There's that one shot where it's like panning around them. It's been in all of the trailers where it's panning around them and they're all standing there back to back. And you think, the day they shot that scene with you know, all seven of them standing together, you thought, that must have been the biggest, you know, wet dream in the world.
Absolutely. I got to say, one of my favorite shots in that entire trailer has got to be Tony Stark falling out of the sky and the Hulk just grabs him and then goes down that wall. And you just go, oh my God.
That was awesome.
You just go, I am so in.
Yeah. Look, you know, I think, you know, all the posters, though, they have me a little worried because they're kind of like, you know, it seems to be Iron Man and the Avengers. But
and as I said in the post that I put up on Geek actually about this trailer, there is a part of me that sits there and goes, I know it's a movie and I understand movies and marketing and everything, but there's a part of me which goes, are we really super obsessed about the actors at this point? We know these characters, right?
Yeah.
Because it annoys me slightly that Iron Man doesn't have his helmet on and Captain America doesn't have his cowl on.
Yeah. You know, true.
Because Robert Downey Jr. doesn't look right without the helmet on.
That's right.
Because he's Iron Man and he looks like he's in full action scene, but without his helmet on, he doesn't look right. And so you just sit there and go, and I know they want Robert Downey Jr.'s face on the poster.
It's part of that, but also, like, they learned their lesson from the first Spider-Man, which was two characters in masks fighting each other, and it didn't quite work. So maybe there's just this fear that they're going to fall into that kind of trap again. But I know exactly what you mean. It's like, you know, they've spent all this time building up these characters. Let them be who they're supposed to be.
That's right. Let the characters play now. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But anyway, with that being said, it's a very small gripe. It's a very small gripe because
looking forward to this film. David, we should move on to the book. We've got something like less than 18 minutes left
but
to go.
But I don't want
to
talk about it. You can't make me.
For this book.
I can't. Huh? I don't want to do it. You can't make me.
I am not going to go over time for this book.
No, I don't think we have to, because I think I can sum this book up in about 4 seconds. So
I think you already have to me before the show. But let's move on.
All right, so this is this one.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
It certainly is. And Richard, this book is so boring.
Get your ass to Moss. Get your ass to Moss. Get your ass to Moss.
Yeah, look, this book is boring. I can't even bother thinking of my own synopsis for this. I'm going to read the official one.
Okay.
Apparently, this follows the incredible critical and commercial success of Dynamite's Warlord of Mars and Warlord of Mars Deja Thoris series, which, you know, you and I are very familiar with, David.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You read it, what, 10 times?
Something like that.
I wasn't quite ambitious. I only read it as 9 or something. But apparently, it's 100,000 years before the time of John Carter. Barsoom...
I'm sorry, but the first thing I read when I read this book, and I went down and went, oh, great, we're reading a John Carter book that has no John Carter in it.
Yeah, I like that they do ultimately have a substitute John Carter in here.
We planned this really well, didn't we?
Yeah, look, we read the wrong books. As I said, it's a Marvel series that we should have read, but, you know, whatever. We're going to put out a John Carter story in a week where everyone's looking for John Carter stories, so whatever. Barsoom is a dying world, David. Its once mighty oceans are receding like the hairline of so many its once mighty oceans are receding and its atmosphere grows more tenuous by the day. The Orovars, who have dominated for a million years, are on the verge of extinction at the hands of the Green Hordes and the emerging Red Martians. Two Orovars, a scientist and a general, race against time to save their people before Mars plunges into barbarism and love. No, there's no love. Be sure.
Oh, there is a hottie.
There is a hottie. I've seen the John Carter movie, and I can talk about it now, and I really enjoyed it. It's a really good pulp action sci-fi film. I think it's one of the first great epic sci-fi films of this decade. And I'm not talking about things like, you know, Inception or whatever, which are particular concepts, or Moon or things like that, which are really good science fiction films. This is one of the first good throwback epic action films that we've had in a long time, kind of in the vein of Conan, the original Conan the Barbarian film, or Flash Gordon. And, okay,
we realize this decade is only 2 years on.
Yeah, look, I said it's one of the first ones
okay,
that we've had.
Okay, fair
enough. And look, you know, sci-fi is a bit of a dying breed sometimes, but I think Prometheus is going to make up for that. But it is fun. And look, you know, I'm not going to mince words. It has its problems, but I just really enjoy the hell out of it. What this book does is, the film is based on... and then these comics as well, the works of Edgar Rice Burroughs, who created this entire world of Barsoom across about 11 books, I think.
Yeah, and for those who are a little bit lost, Barsoom is Mars.
Barsoom is Mars. Yeah. And there's about 11 books, and not all of them involve John Carter. So this is kind of in the extended universe that Edgar Rice Burroughs originally created. This book is, of course... not by Edgar Rice Burroughs. It's its own story. This has been written by Robert Place Napton, an appropriate name because I was asleep a lot of the time while reading it, and Robert Castro as well. It is a book that's set in that universe, and I think, you know, it's meant to set up the world that John Carter ultimately comes to 100,000 years later. But it doesn't seem as though a lot's changed in those 100,000 years. The Earth, the Mars that they've created has technology that's not too dissimilar from Earth's current technology.
Right.
And, you know, they've got a character in there who's more or less a John Carter substitute. They've even got their Princess of Mars substitute in there, and the fight between... the Red Martians, the Thals, and the emerging race of the Green Hordes, as they call them, and the emerging race of humans and Reds, you know, and all these kind of races that are well established by the time John Carter arrives. So it's kind of the prequel we didn't really need
or really want. Yeah, exactly.
Look, going into this, we wanted to do a John Carter book because John Carter is out at the cinema next week. Marvel is releasing two other official books. One of them is actually called Princess of Mars.
Yep.
The other one, I think, is called, and I'm just trying to find, I think it's actually called, well, there was actually a John Carter Warlord of Mars series that came out in 1977.
Yeah, there's also the
by Marv Wolfman, and that was also called Warlord of Mars. I think they're reprinting that.
Right,
Princess of Mars started coming out in September, and I think that's just finishing up now.
Yeah, so the two books that Marvel's producing are John Carter, Princess of Mars, and John Carter, The World of Mars. And The World of Mars is actually the direct prequel to the movie. It actually carries the logo from the movie.
And there's also another one coming out in, I think, March, April, called The Gods of Mars. It actually comes out on March 21st, so that's after the film comes out.
Okay, cool.
And it's another one coming out from Marvel, and apparently that one is it looks like it's a it is an adaptation that's considered part of canon, apparently. So I don't know if I think that there might be a follow up to the film as well. So keep there are a lot of comics coming out, and they actually look a hell of a lot better.
And you know, it's kind of disappointing because Dynamite has been on a bit of a roll. Dynamite were the ones that released the Kevin Smith Green Hornet series, which was really good. They're doing the Bionic Man at the moment. Their Vampirella series, as I said, was actually really good. They've been doing some good stuff.
They've got a lot of licenses. They've been doing things like Army of Darkness and...
I actually just read that. That's actually really, really intriguing. The new Army of Darkness is Ash is now a girl.
Right.
Go figure. I don't know the...
Which is interesting because that could tie into...
The remake.
The remake movie, yeah.
So they've got some really interesting product, and I keep looking at Dynamite stuff thinking, yeah, there's something there. And then to read this, you just go, wow, this is so uninspired. It's like it's taken all the worst elements from every cheesy science fiction film you've ever seen, including absolutely incomprehensible names and incomprehensible measurements and times that they never explain.
It's such a strange book, and it's a lazy book too. It's,
really lazy.
We joked before the show that there was this two pages, and I think it's in issue 3, and I'm just checking that now, where they've basically taken the same
captions. Dialogue. Yeah, the same speech bubbles.
Two pages here, this is all we get. Whoa, steady boy, that's one of ours. Easy boy, yeah, ah. Marauders, yeah, boy, run, cowards. And that's it. For 3-4 pages, that's the only dialogue we get. And it's not terribly interesting. I mean, look, and I'm sorry to say, because I know artwork's hard to do. The artwork's not that interesting either.
No, it's boring. It's
there's a little bit of a cheesecake attempt in the red woman character, who's kind of the substitute.
Well, quite frankly, she looks like Sheena. She looks like Vampirella. She looks like just about every one of those female characters. They've just colored her red.
Exactly. And look, the thing I like about the movie is that the female character in that, she's actually quite a strong character. One of the things that Disney are pitching this film as, and apparently the latest ads in the States are pitching this as before Star Wars, before Avatar, there was John Carter. And I was reading Twitter today and people were like really confused, but they're going, what, dog? That's not true. John Carter's only coming out this year. Star Wars was 1977. Fail. I think a lot of these people don't realize that sometimes there are these things called books
yeah.
And they're made into films later on.
Yeah, a lot of people forget about literature nowadays.
Look, you know, there's these things called libraries where I'm quite familiar with. You might want to head down to one of them.
This is my favorite, though. My favorite part of this book, we were talking about the laziness in this book. Yes. My favorite part of this is actually in issue number 4. We should point out this is a 5-issue series. In issue number 4, on page 21, they're walking down a dark corridor underground, and I kid you not, the guy actually says, "This is the last of it. Where is Roan?" And the guy says, "Very well. He must be with the truck. Let's move quickly. We'll try for 2 more loads tonight." Then, on the next page, they're actually standing next to the truck, and he says, "This is the last of it. Very well. Where is Roan? He must be with the truck. Let's move quickly. We'll try for 2 more loads tonight."
I remember because I was reading through this quickly when I was getting to the last couple of issues, and I thought, didn't I just read that? No, I've got to move on. And then, no, you're right. That's exactly, I'm looking at it now.
Different pictures, same words.
That is so bad. That is terrible.
And that is just cut and pasting. It's like I read it, I actually had to go back and forth a couple of times, and I was really going, did I really just see that? You know?
It's actually interesting, David, how lazy sometimes some of this is, because on issue 4, page 21, there are two panels that are exactly the same as the panel before.
Two panels that are exactly the same as before.
Same as panel before. Sorry, I'm just this podcast has now gotten lazy.
Oh, yes, and look, and it says, "Let's move quickly. We'll try for 2 more loads tonight."
Tired. Look, I'm going to wrap this puppy up very quickly and say, look, if you own an iPad, if you have access to the internet, the original Edgar Rice Burroughs novels are available for free. Because they're all out of copyright.
And this is why everybody's making comics.
Yeah, exactly. But read some of those instead.
Fair enough. I would agree with you. I would concur and go see the movie.
Go see the film.
Yeah. Because that's actually the movie's actually got John Carter in it.
It's got John Carter in it. The movie's got better special effects. Read the book Princess of Mars, or maybe even the comic Princess of Mars, because the movie is largely based on that novel.
Now, my question is, do they actually have repeated dialogue in the film every 5 minutes?
No.
But he must be with the truck.
that's horrible. That is probably one of the worst examples of lazy comic book writing, or just cheap cash in. I hate to, like, you know, we've not been mean to a comic yet, but this was a really, really poor effort.
Yeah, look, I'm going to say right now, Warlord of Mars, The Wall of the Baboons, should not be read right now.
And I'm going to say that Warlord of Mars, Gag Me with a Bassoon, should never be read.
All right, look, this is a terrible book. Do not read it. Look, I'm very, very sorry to Dynamite and the people who wrote it. I know you don't deserve to be mocked, but yeah, well, actually you do, because you put this out. This is a terrible book, and I really can't believe this actually made Quality Control out of the gates. Shame. This is one to avoid.
Definitely.
Go read Ratcatcher instead.
Now, David, moving along to a little happy news. I forgot to mention before, the giveaway that we've been plugging the last 2 weeks is now closed.
Yeah, we've been plugging that on everything. We plugged it on the film show. We plugged it everywhere. So
we've got a few entries for that now. If you're a regular listener, tune in next week. And you'll get the winners to that giveaway. We'll be drawing those throughout the week. We'll announce the winners next week. So you'll have to listen to the show to get the winners. It's a sneaky way for us to get you to listen to the show.
Absolutely. What we will do is probably a few days after the episodes come out, we might actually post them as well. otherwise, people will be going, did I win?
No, you must listen. But next week, we're going from the ridiculous to the sublime. We'll be looking at a classic comic book next week, which is, of course, Art Spiegelman's Mouse.
M-A-U-S. It can't be any worse.
Oh, no, look, this is a book that we know is a classic book and has been highly praised for several decades now. So,
thank God. Quality reading.
Yeah, we went with something safe after this. So we've got a few good ones coming up, and then we'll see what we're going to do after that.
But, and we should remind people again that they can always have a read in advance. They can always go to your website and have a look at the stuff that's coming up.
They certainly can. So if you go to therealbits.com, that's REELBITS.com, which is where you can find me most of the time. You can find over on the right-hand side of the front page, you'll always see an ad for the next episode of Behind the Panels, as well as the other film actually podcasts that we do. And you'll see a link there to a list of all the episodes we've already done and what we've already planned coming up. So if you want to read ahead, that's where you get the issues from.
Excellent. That's good to know. All right. So, Richard, we got to get out of here. We got to wrap this puppy up. Where can people find out more about you? Oh, you just said, didn't you?
As I just said, you can find me on therealbits.com. That's REELBITS.com. Or you can hit me up on Twitter on DVD Bits.
And you can find me at geekactually.com. Or you can find me on Twitter at David McVeigh. Geek Actually is the host of this show, and basically you can also find out about our film show and everything else that we do, fan pages and so forth. By the way, the Behind the Panels fan page is doing quite well, isn't it?
I think it's because we made liking it a requirement to enter our competition.
That was clever of you.
Oh, it's a strategy that's paid off for me.
All right, so we need to get out of here. I do have a young boy next to me who makes lots of Batman-type fan films and stuff, and just would like us to say youtube.com/Nicky McVeigh. Go and have a look at Smile, because you'll hear wonderful stuff like... Oh, where is it? Like... Oh, crap. I was all lined up before.
It's really dark in here.
Yeah, like that.
You'll also hear stuff like...
Okay, just don't shoot me.
And...
Give us all your money.
But you won't hear...
Hey, I'm amazing! But you will hear...
Batman.
Yeah. There you go, you've had your plug. All right, Richard, I'll see you next week.
And I'll see you in hell.
After this book? Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Bye, everyone.
Bye.